Welcome to I Do, I Sue, a family law podcast with Timothy Nichols and Gillian Yeend.
Okay, so Tim, as part of our discussion about having to either sell or transfer real estate as part of your property settlement, we have an expert joining us, which is very exciting.
Where? I don't see him. Oh, there he is.
So we've got Luke from Harcourts, Newcastle, Lake Macquarie and Hunter Valley. And just so you know, I've known Luke in my professional capacity, and there are two things I like about Luke as a real estate agent. And the first thing...
His hair. No.
He does have good hair. Thanks, so, guys. Tim... will always judge someone on their hair. So I knew you guys would be okay.
Vanity is just.
Thank you.
It's aesthetics, all aesthetics. But anyway, the first thing is, when I first met Luke, I did tell him the joke that I tell every real estate agent. And it's not really a joke, but I told him what I tell every real estate agent, which is, people like to make lawyer jokes, but lawyers make jokes about real estate agents.
True.
And he took that with good humor. So we liked that.
He's one of us.
Yeah, he's one of us. And secondly, and I think this is the more important thing, I had a friend who was talking about, you know, wanting to sell her house or looking for properties. And I said, look, I know this guy. I've met him. He doesn't mind jokes about real estate agents. And I think he's a really trustworthy real estate agent. And my friend, and I told my friend who it was, and she was like, I just met him too. And I thought he was a really good real estate agent as well. So I thought that was a really good kind of reflection on Luke, that more than one of us was saying, you know, this is a good guy. Because I think maybe it's a bit hard to find that with real estate agents. Or is that totally just... Mark, what people say about you guys?
I think your perception's right.
Okay. Well, you know, other real estate agents may or may not hear this.
That's fine. So. They're not in this room. I don't care.
Yeah. Okay. Good. All right. So, because we like questions, we have some questions for you. So, I hope that's okay, Luke.
Of course. Yep.
Great. So, to start with, and maybe we can each ask one question as we go.
That's great.
Why did you become a real estate agent?
Good question, Gil. So, I became a real estate agent I sort of fell into it, to be perfectly honest. I didn't really think that I was a salesperson, and I thought the salesy type of approach, it seemed a bit snaky. However, I realized that in real estate, it is literally about just building connections and putting people into houses that they want to purchase and making that move. So I just thought it was a really exciting career, and also being such a big transaction, a house, probably one of the largest purchases you'll ever make, I would imagine. I just thought that was really exciting to be in the middle of that and helping people with that.
Yeah, and that's good, because we've been talking about the fact that as family lawyers, we are problem solvers first in relation to the legal issues. And you're right, you know, one of the biggest things we have to navigate people through is what happens with their biggest assets, i.e. it's usually their home, and it's really important to people. So it is kind of nice to be part of that transaction.
Yeah, it is. You feel like you're making a difference. You're not, you know, you're actually helping people. Yeah. And it's exciting.
And you probably get presents at the end of that, though. Like, one of the other complaints we have as family lawyers is people never buy us presents at the end of the transaction, but I feel like you would get presents.
I've received socks and wine and chockies and, it's okay.
You get all the presents. Yeah, we're in the wrong industry, wrong part of the transaction.
We are.
Yeah.
All right, so next question.
Then what's the best thing about being a real estate agent?
The presence.
Of course it is.
No, look, I think I get a thrill out of every single day, because I know that I'm always doing something that's going to be super intense and it's going to make a difference. So, you know, I had a job before where I was just on a computer and I felt like I made zero difference, whereas I know that the phone calls I make, the people I meet and, you know, that sort of thing, it makes a difference in people's day-to-day lives, I guess.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I mean, it puts a roof over their head gets them out of a roof and into another roof at some point, hopefully, I guess.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, so again, these are the basic real estate questions before we get to the nuts and bolts of our kind of stuff. But what is the market like at the moment? Because it seems pretty crazy.
Yeah, it is. So since COVID hit, and then we've come out of COVID, we have really seen nothing but growth for Newcastle, Sydney, the whole of Australia, basically, from what I can understand. Not that I'm an expert there. But for Newcastle, all we've seen is growth for around the last sort of 8-9 months, realistically. So prices are, they have grown significantly. People are paying even more than what they would have been paying 6 months ago for houses, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. It's just unbelievable. And you see, things just seem to jump off the market so quickly, like it's advertised and then within a week it's already sold.
Oh, easy. Like I've sold a property in, you know, 10 hours. We've sold, things are moving very, very quickly, and that's because the demand's so high. There's not a lot of property on the market, or there wasn't, and there still is, you know, pretty limited supply, and there's a lot of buyers looking to purchase.
Yeah.
Interest rates are pretty low, so it's all really, it's creating an environment where competition is really, really high amongst buyers, and things are selling really well.
Yeah, really so, well. I mean, if you're in a separated context, that's probably a reason at the moment to make sure you've gone through some of the checklist stuff that we've talked about before to make sure you're ready to go, I guess.
Yeah.
When you're selling a home, I guess, as there's a few things that we think about as family lawyers, which we'll touch on shortly, but on your side of it, what decisions do people have to make when they come to you? What does that process look like?
Yeah, so generally the decision is that they're definitely selling. That's one of the first questions I ask is, have you made the commitment to actually sell? And then if the answer is yes, I'm definitely selling. And then it's just about how to get the home ready for the market, whether that be painting, doing some work that they haven't done just yet, presenting the home in the right sort of way, and then the method of sale realistically. So whether they go to auction, which is very popular at the moment, with clearance rates at 94% for our company.
Wow.
Yeah, very, very high. Yeah. Normally about 65% yeah. in a typical market. So you're looking at whether you go down that path and then how to market the property. Those are the general decisions that people are making.
So when someone comes to you, do they have to have the contract of sale already prepared before it goes to market, or is that something that can come later?
So we can't advertise unless we've got a contract of sale, but the time that I meet my clients generally, they don't have one in place. Yeah. So we would advise, or they would tell us who they use as a conveyancer or a solicitor, and they would prepare that once we sign an agency agreement to say that we're working for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. And in terms of things like, you know, getting your house ready for sale, do you talk to people about, look, this is an optional extra, or you've got to do this because you just cannot list your property for sale? Or how do you navigate those issues with them?
Look, I'm pretty direct with my clients, even if they're not my client yet. I'll say, listen, based on my experience, and the reason I'm here is obviously because you want to hear what I've got to say, I would definitely tell you, you need to do this work in order to get the price that you're after. But there's also, there's a lot of different circumstances. Some people can't do the work, they don't have the money to pay for the work, and so on and so forth, or they just don't want to do anything to the property, they just want it on the market. So it's not always the same,
yeah.
But I'll definitely explain the best way to put your house on the market to get the best price, yes.
And you're like, I think you should mow your lawn, like, before we advertise it.
Yeah, exactly. You should probably put away, you know, the dirty clothes and make it look half presentable. That's right.
That creepy doll collection in the spare room, maybe put that in storage for a while.
Yeah, like, probably.
Yeah,
that probably got divided in the property settlement, though, didn't it?
Yeah, it was probably a hotly contested item. And so in terms of getting a listing price, how do you work that out? Like, how do people go, okay, this is what we're going to put it on the market for?
Yeah, great question as well. So, Gil, what we do is realistically we use our knowledge of the market. So if I've sold something in the neighbourhood, in the street, something identical, then I've got a really good knowledge of what the market's willing to pay. Obviously, the market changes very quickly, so it's not as if we can go off 2 months old data on that because the market is shifting quickly. But it will give us a guide. So I guess knowing the market and selling in the market, that gives me an advantage.
Yeah.
But also what we'll do is we'll look at the recent sales that have been made. And when I say recent, they should really be very, very recent. I'm talking weeks, not months, if possible, to give you a guide. So you'll look at 123 Smith Street, which is very similar, you know, 128 Smith, which is inferior, and 150 Smith, which is, you know, which is a better property. And you'll go, well, I believe that buyers will see value between these sort of marks.
And how common is it that people go, thanks for your info, but I want to list it for $100,000 more than what you're telling
all
me.
All the time.
Okay. Yeah. That's great.
All the time, especially in a market like this, you know, and sometimes they're getting it, but vendors are cluey and they realize that, hey, I could probably ask something a bit higher and get it. And people are, yes, it happens all the time. But the idea realistically is to be, you know, it is to be realistic. That's the way to get the best result out of it. If you start high, you miss buyers, you don't sell.
Yeah. And in, sorry, and just coming back to this question in a separated context, I mean, I presume it's pretty important for people who are separated but about to sell a house to really work through that listing price and what their parameters are early on in the piece. Because otherwise, you then go through the process, have people making offers, and then can't get a deal because no one can get a consensus about that.
Yeah, I think everybody's, you know, and I've sold a lot of homes for people that are divorcing, and I've sold a lot of, you know, properties for people who have passed away and executives at will. So I think communication to absolutely everybody that's involved is really, really paramount for that.
Yeah.
But the thing I always stress on the first meeting or so is you don't have to set your expectation on price today, because we don't know what it's going to sell for. The reality is we set up a strategy that'll get the most buyers through your property and the most interest, and then we allow them to tell us what they're willing to pay within the competition, right? So I think, yes, you can have some hard and fast lines around pricing and what you expect, but the reality is until you put it out to the market, you're just not going to know what people are willing to pay straight away. So you've just got to be open and honest and flexible with what comes.
So maybe if you're a separating couple, you need kind of, you know, bookends in terms of what your price, you know, parameters are, rather than a really fixed kind of guideline. So, you know, it's going to be within this range, and maybe it's a bit bigger so that you can navigate those disputes.
That's right. And it should be realistic. Like, you know, you don't want to walk into a house and say you're going to get $2 million when it's only worth 1.3, because you're always going to be met with, you know, that an argument at the end of it, really, or somebody not agreeing to it. So you should just be super, I'm always very conservative in my approach so that people always come back and it's under promise, over deliver, not tell them something they want to hear.
It's kind of a big, you know, difference to sell at the end of the matter, isn't it? $700,000 difference. Like,
absolutely.
You're okay with that, are you?
And I've seen it happen.
I think something that we can do in this context as family lawyers is our job is to identify risks as they could happen, or we foresee that they may happen. And there's something that we can do when we're drafting orders to take that control away from the parties. And we can nominate that if the parties can't agree within 14 days, that they approach the president of the then Real Estate Institute of New South Wales, or whatever state they are, to make an assessment, you know, and do things like that, and choosing the agent and things like that. And we're talking about managing that conflict at that end of the level.
Yeah. But ideally, you want people to be able to have their own choice and feel comfortable with who they use. But yeah, I mean, we do get heavy-handed like that if we
sometimes
need to.
Sometimes we need to.
So in terms of, you know, when you're dealing with a separated couple or a divorcing couple, how do you communicate generally with them? Like, what, how have you found the process has been in terms of, you know, being transparent about information with both of them?
Yeah, so I make a point that whether it's multiple or, you know, executors of the will or multiple people involved or a separation, that everybody gets the same information.
Yeah,
and you're not always favouring one person. Like, if I'm, you know, friends with the husband but they both appoint me, well, I'm not only going to be going through the husband for the information or vice versa. So it's just about any bit of information, I'm calling you, the wife, and I'm also calling you the husband, or husband, wife, whatever that might be, to get the information through. It's just everyone's got to be on the same page, otherwise a decision can't be made.
I mean, that's super important.
Absolutely. And then talking about that, when we go through that process, how does the negotiation process work? Like, people come to you, you go to them. Like, what's that look like?
So generally what happens is, you know, we're negotiating, and every offer that we get in, again, it's the same thing. So we're going back to both parties and telling them the offer and getting their feedback from it. You know, so it's really just communicating every single offer and all the terms and conditions to both parties if they're not together.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So one thing clients often bring up with me, and I don't know the answer, like I know there's the rules around if something super scary's happened in the house, you've got to disclose that. Mm. But, you know, if you've got vendors who are separating, do agents, you know, let the cat out of the bag or tell prospective purchasers, or are you, like, is that on a need-to-know basis? Do you get permission from the vendors first, or how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, I would always get permission from the vendors or ask them what they'd like me to tell buyers if it comes up, because it does come up.
Yeah.
But
does it come up often? Do people go, oh, is this a divorce sale?
Yeah,
like, okay.
Yeah, people do ask questions all the time, and it's funny. Like, everybody wants to know why people are selling, but it's really nobody's business, right? Yeah. That's my understanding of it. But people do ask questions all the time. But what I would normally say is, you know, they're just moving on. You know, like, they don't need to know the ins and outs, because I do feel that sometimes, unless the vendor would want me to say what the scenario is, which is a separation, I feel that buyers feel as though they could get an upper hand, or this could be a fire sale, or, you know, and I don't want to give away my vendor's position like that.
Yeah, that's a good answer. Mm. They're just moving on. Like,
hopefully
they are. Sometimes they don't move on as part of the separation process, but yeah.
And then, so in dealing with this sort of environment where you're dealing with separated couples, do you think that there is any kind of training available in how to deal with those sorts of things, or is it just a common sense approach to dealing with conflict?
Yeah, look, I think it's a lot of common sense, really. However, you know, every week we train within our office, we role play different scenarios and, you know, separation and death and all that sort of thing. Those are scenarios that we role play all the time. So there's no specific training that I've gone to that said, hey, this is how we deal with a separation sale. But within the industry, there's a lot of experts that have done it before, and you can get a lot of information, you know, and we do that weekly to talk to our other agents and just find out how they deal with scenarios. And that's how we learn.
And then building on from that, then, how do you see, so obviously you do the transaction, you facilitate the sale. What does success look like for you in that transaction?
That's a good question, Tim.
That's a great question, Tim. That's a really good question. You've prepared that.
I like it.
Yeah. Are you role playing?
I am.
I love that.
Look, I think success for me, Tim, really is
a check.
No.
Can I say that's the lawyer in him coming out? Just ignore him. This is why people make lawyer jokes.
That's right. You
know? We all love it. Look, I love feeding my kids. I love paying my mortgage. They're all fun things. So, look, the reality is, though, I think success for me is when I can look, you know, both clients in the eye at the end of the day, and whether it's a phenomenal result or what they're after, or they're sad because of the separation or whatever it might be, but I can look them in the eye and they can say, Luke, we appreciate you did everything that you could and you got us a result. So I just want to make sure that I can do that every single time.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
See, this is why he's the nice agent. Yeah. Like, you know, no, that's great. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Oh, you're welcome.
I think it's helpful, and it's helpful for clients going through a separation process to kind of have an idea about what that looks like. Because sometimes our clients might have purchased a house but never have sold a house during the course of their marriage. You know, they've lived it there, and, you know, having certainty around that sale process, you know, can take away some of the other anxieties they're experiencing with the other changes in their life.
I completely agree. And I think in initial client conferences that we have, there's a lot of new things that come to people through separation, you know, dealing with family law, dealing with things, how to sell off or do whatever they need to do.
What happens with property the door connection.
That's right. Yeah, it's all of it. Yeah. All of it. Yeah. And I think demystifying that process like we're doing today, I think, is really useful for a lot of people.
Yeah,
it's pretty scary. I mean, you know, you don't know what's going to come out of things a lot of the time. I mean, I've got two houses I'm about to sell in this exact scenario, literally in the next 2-3 weeks, and I've got to sell both for the couple. But it is just about being clear, I think, and knowing what to expect, and knowing that every bit of info is going to come through, and it might not be what you want to hear, but it's going to be honest, and you can make a decision based on it. So,
yeah. Really good advice. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
No worries.
You've been listening to I Do, I Sue, a family law podcast. with Timothy Nichols and Gillian Yeend. To find out more about your hosts and what they do, visit chamberlains.com.au. And now, here's the bit the boss insisted we say. The information in this podcast is for general educational purposes only. None of the content should be considered legal advice. Please don't make decisions based on the information in this podcast without seeking professional legal advice of your own. For more information, visit chamberlains.com.au.